Welcome back, everybody. Time again for another episode of OC Spotlight. The one show that takes a look at the most incredible people doing the most amazing things. And today, well, we've got a big one for you here today. Somebody who certainly made an impact in Southern California and across the globe here. I'm going to let him introduce himself. Welcome to the show here, sir.
Hey, Paul. How are you doing today?
I'm good.
Awesome Friday. I'm excited to be on your show.
Tell us who you are and what you were most recently doing here.
All righty. Well, my name is Toby Corey, and I've got a nice checkered history and doing a lot of crazy things in my life.
I'll say some big ones along the way here. So tell us about how did Toby Corey come to be the president of Tesla Energy Group?
Yeah, let's see here. Well, I had a large, successful career in high tech here in Silicon Valley. I was running a billion-dollar network operating system business back in the early 90s, and then I've always been a very restless soul. And myself and a kindred spirit set out to create start our own company. And we have the time when the internet was being born, this thing called a web browser and an HTML protocol.
Wow.
And we went on to create the world's largest web development company. So we were one of the pioneering companies on the front of perhaps the greatest innovation in the last 100 or 200 years of humanity.
Really? Yeah.
And
really.
Had a chance to build some amazing websites and go through a public offering and create a company of 5,000 people, $1 billion in revenue, and that was just an incredible ride. And then I was on this board of directors with Dr. Richard Leakey, who is quite a character in and of himself.
I had the chance to hear him speak at UC Irvine a few years ago. Was it Richard Leakey or his son? I forgot which one. Or maybe it was his daughter, yeah. And one of them talking about all the work that they do in, what was it, is it Uganda or Kenya?
In Kenya. So his story is epic. So he was a famous Leakey family. He discovered the famous Lucy fossil over 1 million years old.
Right.
And he wrote a book in the early 90s called The Sixth Extinction. And he's chronicled the exact problem that we're having right now, which is facing an existential threat with climate change, where we're seeing temperatures rising, oceans rising, poles melting, biodiversity shrinking, our oceans becoming more and more acidic, and all of the factors around that. And he's been quite the, you know, savant and I think just very visionary guy. And that got me really thinking about, you know, as I think about what deep responsibility we have to ensure that future generations have a better opportunity than we had. And I'm not sure we're living up to that, our responsibility. And I was very moved by that and then had the opportunity to go to Solar City, where Elon Musk was our largest shareholder and our chairman of the board.
Right.
And got to go through my second IPO there. And that was an unbelievable time. And then got a call to go back there. They felt the time was right to merge the two, which I always thought should have happened earlier.
And that, really, yeah.
That's just incredible vehicle.
Because that wasn't necessarily the obvious play on Wall Street, you know.
No, it wasn't. Sometimes Wall Street, I think, has a hard time, you know, seeing things. I mean, look at Tesla stock today. It was, you know, 3-4 months, it was $178. I think it's over $800 today, right?
Yeah, right.
But so if he is disrupting the entire transportation sector, and you're changing the paradigm there. So you've got these electric vehicles, but you're filling them with fossil fuel electricity. It kind of defeats some of the purpose. So we're seeing a resurgence at I almost look at solar technology very much like computing, where computing started out in these big mainframe minis running in these big large rooms with air conditioners.
Yeah.
I'm getting myself right now.
Right.
And then it moved to a more distributed paradigm where the CPU cycles now run on the palm of your hand with your iPhone or your Android. And energy is moving in the same direction. The cost of panels coming down, the cost of technology coming down, the abundance of sun, and now the ability to self-generate. And then with the Tesla Powerwall and your electric vehicle, it's changing the world. So it's an amazing time to be alive.
It really is. But a rare opportunity for me to ask you the question I hear all the time when they talk about batteries. The basic battery has gotten a little better, but it's still the basic battery that's been around forever. Maybe it's lithium now, and maybe it holds it a little longer. But is that what's holding it back, the ability to store this power for longer than just a few hours? You can generate it, but it seems to be the battery that's the limiting factor in the car, in its range, in transferring us off of fossil fuels to a permanent renewable platform here.
Yeah, well, it's a little bit more complex. You're right on one hand. However, we're not quite seeing Moore's law, where CPU cycles double every
I guess that's what I was getting at, right, yeah.
Yeah, but we are seeing major innovations. You know, the first version of electric vehicles couldn't even go 50 miles. And now you're looking at cars that can go 400 miles. So that's a 4X improvement in less than 5 years.
Right.
And I think that, you know, one of the smart things that Elon did, he's such a visionary entrepreneur, was understand how to put the right strategic pieces in place to have the kind of disruption and innovation. And he invested very early on in the Gigafactory, which is now the largest lithium-ion battery factory in the world. And he's doing amazing R&D work that is going to show leaps and bounds in the ability to store energy. But its biggest piece is that not only is it going to increase radically over the coming months and years, but more importantly for homeowners, that you know, one of the things that makes solar challenging is that when you're at home, you're usually using about 40% of the electricity your solar system is generating. And then we get into kind of a gray area where we need some public policy to help. It's called net metering. So when your system is over-generating, it's feeding it back into the grid, which does get consumed, but it's, you know, it's complex. But now with my battery, I can charge my battery up and use that. So it's really changing the paradigm in dramatic ways. But you're going to see, you know, I know I'm going on my 10th year teaching entrepreneurship at Stanford University. There's amazing R&D work being done on solar cells there, Tesla solar roof. So I think you're going to see probably one of the greatest innovations occur in the storage area in the next 5 years.
Okay, because that always seems to be the weakest link in the process here, that the battery is still the battery, and it's better.
It's coming. It's coming, Paul.
It's coming. Okay, I'm hopeful. And then the other thing, what about pushback? You know, I'll give just a perfect example. So I have a second home out in that I inherited out in Palm Springs. My parents used to live in, and when they passed, I inherited out there. And out in the valley, I was going to put sun all the time. I'm going to put solar on the roof here. I won't ever have to worry about it. And yet they took away the tax incentives. And then the local utility said, we're not going to pay you that much for the power that you're taking back because it's hurting into our business. We're in the power production business. We don't want to be buying it from moms and pops all around America with their solar roofs. And all of a sudden, the kind of solar business dried up. It what was red hot suddenly cooled off. That pushback, is that a short-term pushback or is that a big-term problem here?
No, it's definitely a short-term pushback. And I think when you see paradigms changing and industries dying, you're seeing the last gasp. So
right.
I think we all know fossil fuel is not the greatest thing for our planet. It's emitting massive amounts of CO2 into our atmosphere and causing massive sort of climate debt for future generations to come. So the beauty of it all is that not too long ago, you know, solar systems were $7 a watt. So an average solar system is 7 kilowatts. So it's $7, that's $50,000.
Right.
Today, they're under $3 a watt.
Wow.
We still have a ways to go, but especially with storage that allows you to unhook from this net metering so you don't need the regulatory and the policy issues that you're running into some difficulties with your current utility provider.
Right.
And I just believe in freedom, and I believe consumers should have a choice. And when you can only buy electricity from one provider, they can escalate their rates whatever they want, and it's a monopoly.
Right.
So times are changing quickly. I think it's not going to be long before you're going to be able to purchase a system that will pay for itself in very short order or enter into a lease or a power purchase agreement that is actually cheaper than what you're getting today without having to shell out any money. So that's around the corner. I can guarantee you that within the next year or two.
And what do you think about, I hear our city of Irvine apparently has done this. I think the city of Palm Springs is doing it where they're giving you a choice to get green energy. And they'll say, well, for the moment, maybe it charges you a little bit more. Maybe it'll raise your $100 bill to $110, something nominal like that. But at least then you're telling us you want it sourced from, I don't know, solar, wind, something, geothermal, something else here. That will consumers pay to switch over to that, even if it costs a couple bucks more? You think that's got hope to it?
I have mixed feelings on that. I kind of think it's BS because one of the things that Elon preached back in the day when the green movement just started, most of the products were inferior and they cost more. And Elon just had a point of view like, that's crazy. Like these products, I'm going to build products that are better that are either at parity of existing cost or cheaper.
Right.
And that's what he's, I mean, although the Tesla automobile is 100% green and electric, like, he has redefined the driving experience.
Totally.
And that is such an amazing product. He's disrupting the, you know, 100-plus-year-old transportation industry in ways that we couldn't have imagined just 3 or 4 years ago. So I think that for those folks that are challenged, maybe living in an apartment or their roof is just not conducive to the right kind of solar production at the right cost level, it's an okay step, but I just don't believe you should have to pay more for that.
Right.
And I think that you're going to find that there'll be more distributed networks that will be in communities that are feeding it directly. So I think it's a short-term paradigm. I don't think it's the long-term, and I think the grid's important. It's like technology today. You've got these servers that run at Amazon and internet-based servers. You're going to have a more of a distributed system that works in a more in concert, and I think is going to drive a much more cleaner, better paradigm.
So let's talk about electric cars a little bit. You came from the solar city side of the equation here, but the electric car is a fascinating development. It seemed inevitable to so many of us, and yet it took so long to get here. And there were others who fell along the way. Fisker here in Orange County, although they've come back now as a Chinese entity here, but you know, they were in the race there for a while and couldn't seem to deliver. Was it just Elon's tenacity? Was it his deep pocketbook that let him keep going, even when there was no profit there? Or was what was it that made Tesla succeed where so many failed?
Yeah, God, that's a really good, very deep question. So I'll try and keep my answer succinct.
Okay.
Going on teaching my 10th year of entrepreneurship at Stanford, and having been a successful entrepreneur myself, both big successes, the mediocre successes, and failures. And I've always looked at, you know, is entrepreneurship something that can be learned or is as DNA?
Exactly.
And I've come to the conclusion that I believe, although you can, like anything, get better at something, either you have the natural ability and you have the natural programming of your brain, or you don't. And as I've hired executives out of FedEx that have failed miserably in entrepreneurial endeavors. And Elon is truly a force of nature, like predecessors in his time, Nikola Tesla, J.P. Morgan, Rockefeller, and others. And he also, many folks don't
People
know
talk him. About him in terms, I've never obviously had a chance to meet the man here. He's one of those unattainable giants that you and a few others have met here. But he's somebody that intrigues us all, and we all wonder how, why, what's the secret sauce here?
Well, I think it boils down to some really kind of simple things. So first and foremost is most folks do not use all of the ability and power that they have been bestowed. We use less than 10% of our brains, and that's been proven with neuroscientists. He is such an extraordinarily big thinker, for starters. And number two, he creates a culture and a pattern of extraordinary challenges. And one of the things that I remember at Tesla was a mantra that he always used, which was, excellence is just a passing grade. So the expectations are so high, you have to rise to such a level there, and he focuses on big, hairy problems, and that's where most people fail.
He wants to go to Mars, and he acts like he's really going to do it.
Yeah, well, he is going to do that for sure. And one of the things, here's a good example. Elon believes in this concept of called first principles, which is breaking things down. Both is an extraordinary engineer. He's an incredible marketer. He's indescribable. But when he was starting SpaceX, he was initially going to buy rockets from Russia. He had some rocket scientists, flew to Russia, and it turns out the rockets were like $60 million. And he started thinking about that, bringing it down to first principle, said, I could build these for $6 million. And he actually worked out the equations on a spreadsheet on the flight back from Russia with PhD scientists there. That's the kind of extraordinary thinker that he is. So there's some market timing, but I just think to have someone that has that kind of strategic thinking, that kind of vision, that kind of fortitude, and to create the right culture where excellence is a passing grade, and then incredibly focused execution. And that's where a lot of companies also fail. They'll think big, they don't challenge themselves enough, or they execute really poorly and focus on the wrong things. So time is limited. That's a constrained resource and bandwidth. So if you're trying to do a lot of things mediocre, versus these two or three things really well. And I've been in meetings where like, hey, that's a good idea, but that's not what we're doing here. And that's the mark of like, I see a lot of CEOs that just don't have that ability of understanding what not to do.
So I'm going to tell you an anecdotal story. I don't know too many Elon Musk stories. There are urban myths and legends floating around of Elon Musk. But here's one that I actually know. And it's just, it's funny that I would even know this. But a friend of mine has a company up in, I think it's like Santa Barbara area. And Elon Musk have, I'm sure he has a million homes, but he has a home somewhere up in that area. And I won't go into detail, but he does basically installs home services, not sprinkler systems, but something like that, you know. And so he had the chance to work at Elon's house and install something there. And, you know, he's thinking, I'm never going to see this guy. And he does. He sees Elon walking around, and Elon comes over to him and starts asking him, how does this thing work? And then the guy says, well, here's what the... And he says, he's fascinated. And he spends like an hour breaking down this, you know, sprinkler system kind of thing or whatever here. And then he says to the guy, this is fascinating. Would you like to stay around? I'm having dinner with some of my friends here. And you, I'd love to continue the conversation. And my friend's like, yeah. And he said, he walked around like, Elon Musk cared enough to you know, talk to me, number one. And number two, he was endlessly curious about the most, what you would think most mundane part of his house is. He was fascinated with everything. And I got to believe that's part of his success, that endless curiosity.
Yeah, well, it is. He's incredibly intellectually curious. So that makes you really step your game up if you want to work there.
Right.
It gets the best out of everyone. You exceed way beyond what you ever thought you could do there. And it's learning how to ask the right questions and being intellectually curious. And he does that at work. Like, he doesn't sit in his office and, you know, have his executive staff meeting. He'll go out. He's on the production floor. He slept on the production floor to figure out some of the production challenges that they were having.
Wow.
He'll roll up his sleeves and work on the supply chain. He'll sit with the CFO and go through the financial plan and projections. He'll meet with an engineer. He'll meet with a product manager. He'll meet with someone on the manufacturing floor at the Tesla facility. And he stays close to everything.
Yeah.
He's just a magnet for knowledge. He's incredibly intellectually curious. And that's, you know, part of the recipe that makes him such an extraordinary, you know, just super talented entrepreneur.
So obviously you had some talents on your own here. This wasn't your first rodeo, and you rode this one out here. Now you're working at what, Stanford? You've been teaching there for a while. Tell us what that did for you. Has this just set you, did it raise your game? Are you on what's your mission now to go forward to try and evangelize and tell the world here, hey, I saw this, it can happen?
Yeah. So here's the way I look at things, and here's sort of this epiphany I've probably had over the last, I don't know, 10 or 15 years. And I sort of look at the world now through two types of lenses. So one, I've had the opportunity every year at Stanford to look into the future. So currently, students going through at Stanford or any other college or higher education are Generation Z. They're thinking differently than any other prior generation. And I'll give you a few examples. They really deeply care about our planet and the natural resources and the current trajectory that we're on. They care about the kind of products they buy and the product they don't want to buy. They care about the people that they want to become and the people that they don't want to become. So they are at an entirely different, both I think intellectual and social level. I think the internet has played a big part in doing that. So that's just been a window into the future. I've always hated, I hated philosophy and I hated physics in school. And I've come to spend a lot of time studying quantum mechanics now, people like John Hagelin and Sean Carroll and others, and a lot in the philosophy area, people like Ram Dass, who recently passed away, Terence McKenna, and some other extraordinary thinkers.
And those are people who are dealing with stuff that doesn't necessarily make sense to the rest of us. Quantum mechanics certainly doesn't. You know, how can something be in two places at the same time, and that kind of nonsense here.
An entanglement where one particle is moved and it entangles another one. And
a billion miles away, and it makes it move at the same thing, and, you know, mind-blowing stuff.
He's an incredible quantum mechanics scientist. I think he's the president of the David Lynch Foundation on Transcendental Meditation, but he's written an extraordinary paper on this unified field theory. And like, we don't know where consciousness exists. I don't know where your memories are. No one knows where that exists right now. Is it really part of your brain? Does it live in some other quantum unified field theory? And we're just starting to learn about this very exotic new physics area.
You sound like the guy's trying to measure a soul. They used to, in the old days, weigh a body as it died and to see if something left. There was something that tangible that left and everything here.
Yeah, that challenges a lot of Newtonian physics and a lot of Einstein's calculations. So we're entering in a whole new extraordinary field area. So what I've come to, and I've had the opportunity to meet some extraordinary entrepreneurs and great thinkers, David Eagleman being one of the great neuroscientists, and he talks about how by the time you reach 7 or 8 years old, your neuroplasticity begins to erode.
Wow.
So it's why when...
your brain gets calcified and set at that age, and
it does.
The wires have been wired, and you can't rethink.
Deeper and deeper, and they get deeper and deeper, and you fall into the same type of pattern where you think the same thoughts, you have the same actions, and you have the same type of emotions. And you roll into this, what I call a zombie society, where we stamp out zombies that go through basically the motion of life.
And isn't that why zombie movies are so popular these days, Dawn of the Dead and everything? Yeah.
So I think that, you know, on one hand, you could look at the world and go, oh, my God, I'm going to hang myself. We have so many problems. We've got climate change. We've got lots of work to do on the social front. Government is, I'll be a little bit of a cynic right now, is corrupt and bought and paid for. But
it's certainly what everybody believes, left, right, and center here.
And on the other side of the coin, I look at Generation Z. So the way I'm looking at the world is, on one hand, we have to be tactical. So you should vote. You should get involved in your community issues. And we are, you know, battling these old paradigms that benefit very few. I've looked at lots of economic data, and the top echelon of a population has done exceedingly well, where the lower and the middle class continue to struggle. I don't think that's sustainable.
No, I don't either.
Climate change issues. We've got incarceration issues. Like, the list goes on and on. On the other side, my deep belief is that we give away the most amazing talent and gift that we're born with, which is infinite creativity. We're all born with it. And it manifests itself in infinite types of ways, and then we throw that all away. So I want to focus on how to inspire creativity for greater good. And I'm working on a platform called Zentrepreneur Life, and it's basically...
Say that again. Not entrepreneur, but Zentrepreneur, like Zen...
Zentrepreneur Life. Yep. Add a Z to entrepreneur.
Okay.
And it's a mixture of how Generation Z is thinking about the world, some of the greatest lessons I've learned from some of the greatest entrepreneurs, and some of the thinking of some of the world's greatest philosophers, into a set of 21 principles that is what I call the start of a conversation. And my belief is that it sets in motion a new type of thinking. And that's really what the world needs right now, is to reinvent, to reformat these paradigms, where we tackle some of the most pressing challenges that we have. We are more fulfilled in our life. We take care of one another in a sustainable way. And I believe that that can all happen. And the point of it is, and I'm also a skeptic on self-help gurus, and I believe that, look, whatever I say today, it shouldn't be gospel, or it should be a small thread in the tapestry of your life. It should inspire you to think about how to take maybe aspects of religion, aspects of people you've interacted with, or other philosophies. How do you make that your own? And that's the most empowering thing in life, and that's where we get the greatest change. And I think we're living in one of the most amazing times in history right now today.
So you're not promoting more groupthink, you're promoting real individual think here, huh? We're going to reboot the brain and reformat all this stuff here?
Yeah, we are. I think it's a combination of many things, in that not only do I think it's how to think differently and think outside the box. And that's been, you know, the amazing DNA of Apple. You know, when Steve Jobs first started Apple, it was his why was how to think differently. And he didn't hire just software engineers. He hired artists. He hired musicians. He hired calligraphers. And before he passed away, the company was near bankruptcy. When he rejoined in 1997, it became the most valued company in the world. We all have that power. And I think it's just a matter of getting that turned on. And part of that is, I do believe that it is connecting with the right people. And one of the things that I'm also doing some research on is a concept called open networks. Mm. And there was a study done 5 or 6 years ago by some data scientists in conjunction with Forbes magazine. And they were looking at kind of what is that one single ingredient that has really made people super successful and super happy in life. And come to find out, it was those that were able to build open networks. People from very diverse types of thinking, diverse industries, that's the magic of it all, because it creates more data. It creates more sort of dots for you to connect in a much more higher sphere of creative thinking.
Not the echo chamber that we live in, the social Twitter worlds that we that tell us exactly what we believe.
And you end up staying in the same swim lane. Like that, all that does is it basically constricts all your neuroplasticity, right? And that benefits very few. And so we've had these great philosophers and thinkers and exotic developments in neuroscience and quantum mechanics. And we are at a renaissance moment right now of a massive expansion of human consciousness. And I'm excited to be part of the wave.
Well, the wave starts on right here in Orange County, March 6th, for the next TEDx talk, where you'll be one of the featured speakers being put on by Irvine Valley College. And you can certainly go online and look for more. What are you going to talk about there? And why come down here and share the word? Are you on a mission here?
Well, I'm on a mission, but more importantly, I am addicted to surfing.
So,
I live in Santa Cruz, where we also think differently, and it's an amazing community down there.
Go banana slugs! Yeah, right.
There you go, and it's one of the most epic surf places in the world. Orange County has arguably as epic surf places down there.
They say this is where Surf City is officially known. They turned Huntington Beach officially into Surf City here, so.
Yeah, and I think California is leading the world in human consciousness. This has been the state that has had such extraordinary economic development and just really free thinking. I think that maybe it's part of the Pacific Ocean, maybe it's part of its alignment in the universe, but California is amazing. It's going to be a great opportunity to come down there. And my title of my talk is How to Deprogram Your Mind to Find Your True Self. And I have developed a new framework that we're going to lay out for audience members that will begin to explore that and what I like to call the beginning of a conversation and the start of a movement.
Well, I hope this is the beginning of many conversations we have with you, because we'd like to be part of that movement. And I'm thank you so much for coming down and sharing. This is March 6th. You get a rare chance to listen to Toby come down and talk about and I'm sure you'll pepper it with some stories of the past, of your earlier success and your Solar City days and what you've learned along the way of teaching at Stanford and all these other things here. But it sounds like you really are onto something here, and I hope we can reprogram our brains, because we're just stuck in some sort of lizard mentality that ain't working too well here.
No, this is going to be an epic movement. I will come to your show anytime, Paul. Thank you so much for the opportunity to meet you and connect with some of your listeners, and I am looking forward to March 6th.
Okay, well, if you'll stay on the line, I'm going to wrap up the show here. I have one quick question to ask you offline, so stick around for 1 second here. And for those of you listening live, that'll wrap up today's show here. We want to thank everybody for tuning in again to Orange County's only community conversation and our OC Spotlight, where we take a look at the most amazing people doing the most incredible things right here in your backyard. On Orange County's only community radio station, OC Talk Radio.net.